the reason why you get paid is to handle that brain damage and get the job done still. So, I mean, you can't make things perfect, but it's all about pushing through those obstacles and still getting it done.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Michael Woodfield is the COO, partner, and co-founder of Obsidian Capital Company. Mike got his multifamily experience working for a small firm located in Austin, Texas. And over the course of 5 years, he oversaw the operations, asset management, and construction management of nearly 5,000 apartment units and the renovation of 2,500 multifamily units, totaling $30 million in renovations. And since co-founding Obsidian Capital, Mike has participated in the acquisition, asset management, and renovations of another 1,000 apartment units. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Appreciate
That's
it.
That's a lot of renovation.
Yeah. It's enough to make you lose your hair.
Well, hey, that's coming close to home here on this side of the microphone.
Looks like you've done more renovations than I have.
Yes, I've done my fair share of construction, but not nearly that amount. I mean, is that something you're still involved in on a day-to-day basis?
You know, I try and be as involved in it as I possibly can be. You know, we're buying and acquiring a lot of units right now, and we're developing a lot. So we're doing ground up builds, but we have three active value add deals going on right now that we are renovating.
Now, are you doing this primarily in the Texas markets? Because I know that the original firm you worked for was in Austin. Where are you guys, I guess to start there, where are you guys based out of now?
So sitting in our brand new office here in Cedar Park, Texas, just north of Austin. So still in the Austin area, central Texas. And yes, most of our developments are all located in and around Austin. However, we do have deals up in Dallas-Fort Worth that more value-add acquisitions that we did a few years back. And then most recently, we picked up another deal over in your neck of the woods, just north of you, over there in Tennessee, just up on the border there, Tennessee and Kentucky. So we have a bunch of units kind of all over. So,
Right. That'll be interesting. If we have time, we'll dig into that opportunity in particular. But talk to us, you know, about renovations right now, about value add deals, materials supply shortages, labor shortages. How are you guys working your way around that here? Because I guess we're recording this just for posterity's sake on the 26th of October, 2021. So how's that affecting you guys and how are you making it happen?
Well, it's affecting everybody, you know, and I joke that the excuse for everything right now is, oh, COVID. You know, you show up at work, oh, COVID.
Right.
Whatever it might be, you really have to figure out what is excuse and what is actually COVID related or supply chain related or labor related. So labor rates have never been higher in the blue collar force, right? I mean, they're skyrocketing. I have a friend that owns a landscape company and he's paying guys 21, 22 bucks an hour to cut grass.
Right.
You know, that's kind of that's the market we're dealing with. So that's increasingly difficult. And in this market, it's such a development market. There's so many new build construction going on that it's hard to get subcontractors to come out and complete a task. So really what comes into play is those deep relationships from the past that, you know, you've worked with these guys for 10 plus years, and you know they'll get the job done. And we've relied on that a lot.
What would you say to somebody who is maybe doesn't have the deep network that you guys do?
Well, you can always network with other syndicators, other folks in the market. You know, if someone called me up, I could definitely give a referral to a construction company that could get the job done. So I would start there. Start with people that do what you do. Maybe you have some friends in the industry and try and get some referrals. Sit down and have lunch with a contractor or somebody and see if you can't strike a deal. So no matter what, we've had issues on some of our new builds. You know, the concrete guy doesn't show up the day he says he's going to, and you know, that pushes back the framing crews that were supposed to come the following week and lumber was supposed to be dropped. So it just creates a whole chain reaction, right? And I mean, the reason why you get paid is to handle that brain damage and get the job done still. So I mean, you can't make things perfect, but it's all about pushing through those obstacles and still getting it done.
Right. Talk to us about the opportunity you see in the new development side of things and Sure. maybe even some risks associated with that.
Oh, absolutely. So I'll start with the risk. because then maybe that will scare some of the listeners away from competing with. I'm just kidding. I hope everybody gets into it because I think it's fantastic. The risk that you see when you're doing a new development, especially right now, is it's tough to bank on a budget. And, you know, let me give you an example of a budget gone wrong. We had a 50 unit ground up development that we're doing here in Austin, just north of Austin, Leander, Texas. And we closed the loan in, it was late summer of 2020. And between late summer of 2020 and the turning of the year 2021, there's about a 400% increase in lumber.
Right.
And, you know, our contractor, our GC, came back to us and he said, look, guys, site work's done. The pads are built up. I'm ready to pour concrete, but you've got to know that I have increases on electrical. I have increases on plumbing. I have increases, huge increases on lumber and framing, windows, all these things, right? And so he kind of dumped that on us in January. And we had to go back to the lender and say, hey, this is not our fault. This is what we're faced with. And of course, the lender wasn't happy at first. But what I did from there was saying the materials may have gone up, but so have the rents in the market.
Right.
So I was able to do a rent study, a comp study. And then I was able to order a new appraisal and show that the value had increased enough to where the bank would lend us more money to get the job done. But that took about 4 months to do. You know, it was 6 weeks waiting on an appraisal. And then the underwriting at the bank took another 6 weeks. And, you know, it was a long process. But that's an example of the risks that you run. Now, if the materials would have gone up, but the rents didn't go up, we would have been kind of pulling from our own pockets to get this deal done. And the value wouldn't have been there. You know, it would have been like, well, this still doesn't make sense. So right now in this market, that's the risk you take is, can you bank on a budget?
Yeah, that's never a fun place for anybody to be. I think that's like, how did that affect your, I mean, obviously your timeline got pushed back 4 months.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a long time to wait. And then I'm assuming you guys take outside capital or syndicating these opportunities. Yeah. So how do you communicate that to your investors?
So what we did is we went back to them. And the good thing is anybody that watches the news knew that materials had gone up. So it wasn't a surprise to anybody that, you know, it's not like we were shielded from this, you know, labor increase or material increase. So they were mad. I mean, it's not ideal. But what we said is we're going back to the bank. We're going to work things out with them. And we did. Went back to them. They increased our loan to cost that we were able to borrow on, which was nice because, you know, interest rates had gone down and we signed up on a higher interest rate before and all this stuff. But anyways, we actually, Glenn and I, my business partner, our other GP partners on that deal had to come out of pocket and we covered the LP portion that we had to come up with. Mm. So it was a painful day, you know, $200,000+ day for Glenn and I to get the deal done. But, you know, it was a good email to send out to say, hey, we're committed to this deal and we're so committed that we put up everybody's portion of what would be a capital call. So fortunately, we're in a position where we could do that. If we weren't, we would have had to go back and ask for more money. And that's just tough to do. And it's not a great look. So that's how we worked it out. And we're moving forward.
Yeah, no, that's a very valid point. And I love your thinking there of going, wait, okay, so if materials have gone up, values hopefully have as well, which, I mean, if anybody is, still on this side of the soil, then they probably know that the values in Austin are, you know, continuing to climb. So that's really fascinating. What are some compelling reasons as to why you guys are still doing value add deals?
Well, you know, in 2015 and 2014, it was pretty simple. You know, you could find a good deal in most everywhere you looked, you know, especially in these core markets like DFW, Fort Worth, Austin, you were buying stuff at $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a door. And it was pretty easy to find a good deal. And then the appreciation just carried you. You know, if you bought in 2015 and sold in 2020, I mean, you made a killing. But now, as we see cap rates compress and the price for doors going above where we've ever seen them before, it becomes more risky. Mm. You know, when you're buying on a four cap in a tertiary market, it does not make a lot of sense. So, you know, you're just banking so much on raising those rents and stabilizing at higher cap rates. It's risky. So we buy fewer deals is the point I'm trying to get to. And rather than buying 10 value add deals a year, we're maybe buying two or three. And, you know, that may not be what other folks are doing, but we're trying to not only preserve capital, but we're also trying to make people money still. So, you know, we're doing a lot of off-market acquisitions and such, and not so much broker deals or on-market deals right now.
When it comes, when you compare value add deals to new development, is there any price difference anymore?
Yeah, there is. In fact, existing acquisitions are more expensive than new build construction. So, you know, where we got to was we're looking at deals in Cedar Park and in Austin. There's trading at $210,000, $215,000, $220,000 a door. And we can build them for $175,000 a door all in, right? So, you know, the difference is that someone looking at that might say, I don't want to go through the risk or take the brain damage of doing development, which I, listen, I understand. It is a lot of risk and it's a lot of brain damage that you take doing one of those projects. But, you know, if you can see the deal through and you do build and then, you know, get that thing occupied, you create the value. So, you know, a lot of these deals just have still a lot of meat on the bone, even with the higher prices and materials and labor. So that's why we're doing it, you know, is there's just still so much value there.
Right. And it seems like maybe the only compelling reason I would think value add makes sense, one is if you can buy it below, you know, below market prices, but then also because you could buy the in-place cash flow versus the associated risk of, all right, so we're going to pay, what'd you say, $215 a door, and you're building for $175, you got a $40,000 spread there.
Yeah.
Right? But we're willing to pay that extra spread because once we buy it, we know that it's already producing an income.
That's right. Well, and that's right. I mean, anything that produces income, it's less risk, right? I mean, on a new build construction, there isn't a cap rate. There's no NOI, right? So you are banking that you can rent those things out and you have data to support that. But you don't know, and neither does anybody else. The bank guesses, right? And they give you an interest rate based off that guess. You know, I mean, it's all risk assessment, but in the markets that we're building and constructing, and they're all huge growth markets next to core markets. So, you know, our business model is not to build in Austin, not to build in Nashville, that type of thing, but to build on the outskirt towns, like go to Clarksville, Tennessee and build there, you know, or go to Leander, Taylor, some of these markets around Austin and build there, because you're still seeing huge growth, but the land is not as expensive and you're able to build at a reasonable price per door still.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Just kind of how all that works out. So how many projects you say you guys are building right now?
So we have 81 units in Taylor, Texas, we're building. We have 84 units in Leander, another 50 unit project in Leander. We just finished building our corporate office here in Cedar Park. And we have a 156 unit deal in Liberty Hill, which is north of us here, that we're going to be building in the next year. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. What's it been like building your team and your company?
Oh man. You know, we have a really unique model that we follow. We like to keep employees and, you know, turn them into partners at some point. We like long-term people we can count on and rely on. So usually the way we operate is we start out with an internship. You know, this is a 90-day internship, apprenticeship, whatever you want to call it. We get to know each other and you really get to prove yourself. And if you do and we like each other and we work well with each other, then we'll make an offer letter. And sometimes those offer letters will have ties to the acquisition fees and maybe even sometime to GP percentage of ownership that they could get in a deal, or definitely like a disposition fee when we sell them. So we try and make it to where, you know, these people want to work hard and they view the deal as their own. We've seen the most success that way. So that's how we build our team, and everybody's falling into their roles pretty well. But just like anything, it's tough to build a team. It's tough to get the people on the bus and in the right seat. And we're constantly trying to work through that. But we're doing it. We're doing a pretty good job, I think.
That's awesome. When it comes to, you know, figuring out that algorithm.
Yeah.
Or, okay, you know, maybe you'll get a part of the GP, you'll get a disposition fee, maybe take part of the act fee. Mm-hmm. Was that an iterative process, or is it something where you guys, and I dig into this because these are things that, you know, people that are growing their businesses have to think about, like
how do we structure it? You know? I mean, it's something that is kind of ebb and flowing. We memorialize everything in a document. We do a memorandum of understanding with everybody. That way it doesn't float, and you know how things go. So you promise something to someone one day and you completely forget the next month. And then they're like, hey, you promised me this. Like, oh man, I'm sorry. So, you know, we make sure everything's documented in writing so that, you know, both them and us can bank on that. You know, we refer to that all the time. So, you know, as far as coming up with the structure of how this would work, Glenn and I ultimately had to decide like what we were willing to part ways with and how much these folks could take off our plate if they were connected to the acquisition directly. And it's worked out well. I mean, they take a lot off our plates. As you know, in asset management specifically, it's one of those things where it's reoccurring every month. You're doing a lot of the same things, reporting and such. These are all time suckers. So having the people there to really take care of a lot of the data entry or the reporting for you, and you're just overseeing what they're doing, is very helpful.
Right. That's interesting. I love the thought process behind how you build a team that way. Yeah. What do you see? I know you said that there's, and we'll circle back on this before we wrap up with the final four, but what do you see as, where is this market headed? I know you don't have a crystal ball, but where are we going?
You know, it's so funny. I was at a multifamily conference about in 2017. And I remember one of the experts, he was from Chicago. He said, if this was a baseball game, we would be in extra innings, you know, as far as a recession goes. And, you know, we probably should have had a recession when COVID hit. I mean, if the government didn't pump so much money into the economy, we would have had one, and a big one. So I kind of think that we're on broken legs already and we just don't know it. So where this market goes, depending on where you're at, it could be really bad in the future, or it could be not so bad. I think, you know, I look at Austin or Nashville, the growth that we're seeing in this market in jobs and high paying jobs is so strong. It might be stronger than anywhere in the country. So the reason why I keep focusing here and putting money here is because of any market, I have faith in this market and I live here. So I know it pretty well. I know all the jobs coming here. So I think it's so specific to the market you're in. You know, if you live in the Midwest, it's different than if you live on one of the coastal towns versus Texas or up north in Michigan. I mean, it all depends, you know, and I just don't know. The labor is just so scary right now and people aren't working. So I guess you're right. I don't have a crystal ball and I'm just kind of along for the ride. So
you're along for the ride, but it sounds like you're positioning yourself in such a way that you're gonna try to be on the best ride maybe the amusement park has to offer.
Yeah, I mean, multifamily is a great investment in my mind long term, because you see people in their 20s, they don't want the American dream, you know, that you and I grew up with, which was buy a house, white picket fence, a dog, you know, the wife and three or four kids or whatever. They want to travel. They want to have experiences. They're getting married later. They're starting families way later, if they do it all. And they want less response. They don't want to mow a lawn on a Saturday, you know, or things like that. So, you know, I think apartments will become more and more appealing to that generation of folks. And I'm kind of banking on that. So,
right. Yeah. No, that's great. I love that. Those are great points you make there. A couple questions for you here to wrap up. If you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Don't lie to yourself when you're underwriting a deal. You can make numbers look any way on a spreadsheet you want them to. Mm. So just make sure they're good, honest numbers. Don't lie to yourself. It's not a good deal. Walk away.
Right. That's great. I love that. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
And I'm in a youth group at my church. I help them every Tuesday night. Tonight I'll be there. And I mean, as corny as it sounds, the youth is the future. Right. And you just got to try and help them through some crazy times, which they're facing some crazy times right now. So that's my investment, is in my kids and in the youth that I'm around at church and trying to help them, you know, become better people and not make mistakes I did. So
that's great. That's great. Awesome. Good work, Mike. That's absolutely true and absolutely necessary. And good for you for having the patience. I don't know how old the youth group is, but you know, if they're in the junior high range, God bless you.
Yeah. Fair enough.
That's awesome. Mike, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Head to our website, obsidiancapitalco.com. There's an investor tab there that you can click on and create an account, and you'll get all of our offering memorandums and phone call from one of us here to talk. And if you don't want to do that, just email me at mike@obsidiancapitalco.com.
Awesome. Mike, thanks so much. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.